The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! One of the Tigers! Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, jeez.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big man takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game.
There's
the play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain of Dustin. Look at his physical ability.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. I'm Andy. The following is an interview we recorded with Sarah Black from AFL Media. Originally, we intended to put it at the end of a podcast, but it went so well and it was so interesting that we've turned it into a standalone podcast. We cover things from the AFLW trading period, what went right and wrong in the season, but then we also go on and discuss the men as well and discuss issues like, is Josh Caddy still best 22? I hope you enjoy it as much as we did recording it. And we're joined now by Sarah Black from AFL Media, and it's a great privilege, Sarah, because we're long-time fans of yours and followed your writing on AFLW and the men and the VFL as well. So welcome to the pod.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It's I've listened to you guys on and off over the last couple of years. Generally tune in after a win rather than a loss. Bit of a fair-weather podcast listener, but yeah, it's good to have a chat.
Well,
yeah. A lot of our listeners are the same, it has to be said.
Funnily enough, often our best work is done in the depths of despair. But, you know, I think one of our best ever podcasts was after the North Melbourne loss, but, you know, where I was, I had to do it all with using Bluetooth microphones because I couldn't be trusted with anything with Elite.
Yeah, there's been a few ugly ruse losses over the years, that's for sure.
Now, Sarah, we really wanted to get you on because amongst your many areas of expertise is the Richmond AFLW team. And, you know, and the first question I really wanted to ask you is, aside from, like, we all know it was fantastic they played and, you know, so many people it meant so much to. But, you know, let's face it, when you sack your coach on 8:30 on a Friday night through the press release, you know, one or two things have gone wrong and, you know, that's self-evident. But what... Aside from the fact that they played, what went right for the Richmond AFLW team last year, do you think?
I think that the top line recruits they attracted were really important in getting the team set from a supporter perspective. Like you want to capture that new fan base, and what better way to do it than bring in the likes of Katie Brennan, Monique Conti and Sabrina Frederick, who are all incredibly marketable players. So I think that was really good that they did that. A few of the VFL girls they've discovered I was quite impressed with. Courtney Wakefield, absolutely loved her marking. Unfortunately, just didn't get down enough for her. And Akech, of course. Akech is so much fun to watch, and I'd love to see her move up the ground a bit next year.
I was a little bit sad that Alice Edmonds' VFL form didn't quite reproduce it at senior level. But, yeah, look, you're right. They certainly discovered some players.
Yeah, definitely. Alice has been in and around the comp for a little while. Like, I discovered a photo on, actually, I think it was Monique's Insta the other day, that her and Monique played under-18s together for Melbourne Uni, along with Izzy Huntington, who's one of the Bulldogs' top players. So she's not like a total newbie to footy, unlike some of the others. So hopefully just needed those sort of runs under the belt. And yeah, hopefully 2021 will be a bit of a better season for her.
Can I ask something? As you know, as someone whose knowledge of AFLW is more at the high level, and what the media has been focusing on, you know, Katie Brennan. One thing I really noticed, like, her stats held up. She wasn't a star, but she was in the first half of the year. She was probably performing better, that she didn't quite deserve the Herald Sun story. But when she went out, the team collapsed. You know, from the moment basically she got injured, the performance noticeably and significantly declined. Is her leadership that important, or was it a coincidence, do you think?
I can't really speak for her leadership, because it's really hard. You can't speak for anyone's leadership, really, unless you're inside the team itself and you know what goes on and how she sort of rallies everyone together. But I think it might have been more of a structural thing, that the team sort of collapsed without her there. It was a fairly, only 21 take the field for AFLW, was fairly shallow compared to other teams, I think it's safe to say. So if you take out a high caliber player, like, I'd rate Katie in the top 30 players in the comp. So taking out someone of that caliber from a team that doesn't have much depth, you're really going to struggle, especially when she can play in the midfield and up forward.
Yeah, actually, before you come in, I really enjoyed that piece you wrote rating the top AFLW players, because it's a very helpful dummies guide for people who are coming new into the comp whose team hadn't been previously playing.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, because I did receive some feedback, it's safe to say. It was there was a fair bit of traction on the piece. So I'm just waiting for my editor to turn around and say, oh, you know, Sarah, do you want to revisit that top 30? And then we'll get all the feedback all over again. But yeah, it was a bit of fun.
So one, obviously, you know, we don't endorse gambling on this podcast, but we do like to pay attention to sports betting odds, and I think Richmond AFLW team were about fourth in the betting for the start of the season. Do you think that reflected the internal expectations for the team?
I don't think so. It definitely didn't reflect my expectations for the team. When I saw it, I was quite surprised. I don't really understand betting, so I don't know what term you'd use, overs, unders, I don't get it. But, I definitely did not expect them to make finals. Probably expected at least one win and a bit more competitive in some of the losses, but I would have been very surprised if they'd made finals, to be perfectly honest, just because they were so far, all the expansion sides really, so far behind the eight ball. Compared to teams like Carlton and Frio, who have been in the comp for, this was their fourth season.
What about, like, you know, who's your Jacob Townsend of the AFLW team? who's the one that probably the opposition supporters don't talk about so much, but the person that you most like to watch?
Oh, wow, good question. Don't we all miss Towner? That's a real sting seeing him play for Essendon. I've just brought up the list now. I really like Sarah Sansonetti. She's quite young, only 19, and her under-18 form in defence was really, really impressive. She reads the ball really well, very calm. She's got good skills as well. So I was quite happy when they there weren't many two-year contracts floating around in the most recent re-signings, but she picked up one of them. And I thought that was a really good move.
Yeah, I liked all of her and Sophie Moylan and Laura McClellan as the, you know, bright sparks in an otherwise tough team. Along with we always have a soft spot for Ruckman on this show, and Gabby Seymour being competitive at both ruck and centre-half back at about 5'9" was pretty impressive too.
Well, what was so incredible about Gabby is that she started the year playing in the same division as I play in, like local footy. And so she played a couple of games for the Basin in the EFL, then got picked up by the VFL team, and then by the end of the year she'd been signed to the AFLW team. So absolutely meteoric rise for Gabby, which bodes well for the future, really.
And I apologise for doing this, but I find these kind of questions fascinating. I have someone in my head who, when I'm asking this question, but I'm interested if you'll say the same person. Who's the Noah Bolter? Who's the freak athlete who could be anything, but you just know, or could be nothing? Who's the person who you're most intrigued that could have the high upside?
It's probably Gabby, to be honest. I don't know whether that was where your mind was going. But just some raw athletic potential. I'd stick with Gabby.
I might have actually been thinking of our our high profile Sudanese back pocket who had a fantastic debut game against Carlton. But defence is a team game, and you know, clearly. Sort of later in the year, she was struggling more in defence, but she wasn't Robinson Crusoe, so I don't want to, I don't want to hang her.
Yeah, I just don't really think she's. I'm not sure about the Noah Bolter comparison, because Noah's really shown that he's been able to knuckle down on those one-on-one contests in the last few weeks, and I really think Akechi is more suited to a rebounding, even on the wing, and just really use that pace and athletic ability. I just don't think she's comfortable having to directly lock onto an opponent. So hopefully one of the recruits they brought in was Harriet Cordner, who is that lockdown defender. So hopefully that will release a catch to get up the ground. Mm.
That's a good transition for me, because we've bought in four players and lost one, and maybe starting on the down note, I think a lot of fans were sad to see Grace Campbell leave the club. But the three Sarahs coming in Darcy, Dargan and Hosking, as well as Harriet Cordner, you mentioned, that it really does feel like it's an injection of stability into the team.
Yeah, exactly right. I'll start with the Grace Campbell one. That was really interesting, because she was such an influence in an area of the ground that the team really struggled, like dead last in clearances, disposals, contested work, and she was one of those shining lights. So to lose her isn't great, especially for only pick 43. She's probably worth maybe about a 30, I reckon. So a bit of a loss overall there. But then you bring in Sarah Hosking, who's better in disposal than Grace. So it's a bit of an upgrade, but it would have been great to see Sarah Hosking, Campbell, Conti and Brennan all work together in the midfield. And then the others. As I said, Cordner can really lock down in defence, and she can also chip in the ruck. She did that a bit for the Ds this year. And then you've got Darcy, who is a relative of Jack Titus, which is really, really cool story.
That is cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
Because it's just reaching back so many generations. To me, Jack Titus is like this mythical figure. He seems like he played that long ago. But she's really experienced player. She's been playing seniors since she was about 14, 15. Really runs really hard, leads well, creates lots of space for her fellow forwards, and has previously played with Christina Bernardi at the Pies. So to have the two of them working again in tandem, I think will help. Just a bit of experience, and I hate the word synergy, but I'm going to use it, synergy there. And then Sarah Dargan's probably a bit more of a longer-term prospect, a smaller midfielder, but she's really tenacious, really tough. And is always eager to improve. So I think that's a sound pick for the future for the midfield.
So you acquired you gave a score for every team in the AFLW for their off-season work, and you gave Richmond quite a high score. Do you think there's a bit of lesson learning? You very, in a very constructive way, you questioned whether some of the decisions last year in the drafting were necessarily the best made ones. Do you think there's been some lesson learned about team building within the club?
Yeah, it's probably just through experience. Like, you speak to other clubs and they say going through that first season was just horrendous. Like it's, they'd all say to me, oh, I'm so glad that season one is out of the way. So every team sort of looks back and goes, okay, this is what we're going to do differently. And I think in that first draft intake, they lent a little bit too heavily on 18-year-olds who, while I listened to you guys last week and you mentioned the, you know, there's not quite the size disparity in the women's as opposed to the men's when the under-18s graduate. But there is an endurance disparity that you just can't, you know, you've still got to get the kilometres under your legs, and it doesn't matter how early you start, you're going to be competing against women who've had 10 years on you. I think that really caught up as the season progressed. Some of those, 18-year-olds just really struggled a bit. And I think you saw that in the delistings with Horn and Fitzgerald and Butler. So hopefully, like, I'm sure those girls won't be lost to the system. We'll probably see them down the track. But to bring in those experienced players will just help with the competitiveness and hopefully minimise that sort of getting blown out of the water that we saw against North and St Kilda.
Yeah, because I could have... If you were going to do an AFLW proof of concept, I'm going to say the game in Bendigo was as close as we got. I thought, you know, great. So the ground was the right size. The crowd was into it. The team was competitive. Like, you know, if you blank out much of the rest of what happened and work from there, I think, you know, the concept works.
Just before, I'm really interested about what we're going to do with the number one pick, but I do want to ask, just because you raised that, Nick. Sarah, I'm very passionate about this issue. Where would you want the AFLW to be playing their games?
I like it how it is. I don't know whether it's just become routine for me. So I'm used to seeing them at those sort of... they're not suburban grounds, really. They're pretty posh suburban grounds. But, you know, your Icon, Witten Oval, all those sort of things, I like them there. Eddie had's good for the weather conditions because I'm sure quite a few of your listeners won't know that the women's actually play with a size 4 footy, so it's smaller, which means that when you get to games out at Casey, not only are the women have less powerful kicks, they're kicking with a smaller ball. So they're, you know, trying to get anywhere down the ground is close to impossible.
And people often don't realise it's actually harder to kick a smaller ball because the sweet spot's smaller on the football.
Yeah. It's a catch-22 because it's easier to mark. Like, I have tiny hands, and if I was trying to play with a size 5 footy, I'd really struggle. I'm glad you brought up that sweet spot because I'll just keep reminding myself of that whenever my kicks go wildly.
I managed to miss the sweet spot plenty on the full-size football. but on the suburban ground, I completely agree. And, it's far better to be in a ground that's two-thirds full than a oversized ground that's a bit empty. But, you know, like... 5,000 at Punt Road is a rocking atmosphere, but it's a bit lost at Princess Park. I don't know. This is just my personal prejudice.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I think AFLW crowds can sometimes be a bit unpredictable as well because you don't have any ticket sales like you do with the men's. So you're sort of relying on people clicking attending on Facebook in a way to sort of, you know, and that's never a good estimate of crowd size. So for the first game, for example, you know, they expected a lockout and didn't get there. And that's, you know, you can't really, it's just really hard to predict crowd sizes really, which is one of the reasons why it was moved from Punt Road to Icon.
Yeah. And Andy's very passionate in his chained himself to the Jack Dyer stand to avoid it being torn down.
But we're not here now. I really want to hear your guys' thoughts about the number one draft pick, because you know it's always exciting when you've got the first pick in the draft. So who's the bright young who's going to turn out Felsian's round?
And can I say it's a throwback for us as Richmond supporters to be fantasising about high draft picks again, because thankfully it's been a while for the men's team.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be wouldn't it be handy if we had Melbourne who had the two picks in front of us again? That'd just work out beautifully. But number one selection. So at the moment, it's sort of really hard at the moment because there's obviously no footy being played in Victoria. So you're sort of throwing back a little bit to last year's under 18 champs, and there were also three rounds of NAB League played back in February, which feels like about 18 months ago. And the one name that has consistently come up over that time is a girl by the name of Ellie McKenzie. She's a really classy outside midfielder from the Northern Knights. I have one passage of play stuck in my head when I think of Ellie. And it was just her just gliding down the wing out at Werribee playing against Vic Country. Just a really classy user of the ball. And considering the midfield is probably the team's weakest spot, I think she'd be a very handy acquisition.
Yeah, and you look at for the men's team, I think it's been pretty much 10 years since we've drafted a tall player with our... you think about all the team needs and then you go and draft the best midfielder available.
Yeah. It's like fullback. Like, well, we can't go wrong. Can't go wrong with a mid.
I like to look of Tiana Smith was one that got the, you know, draft coverage is always difficult in a normal year, never mind this year, but she also got Player of the Week accolades for the abbreviated season.
Yeah. Tiana was really strong at the champs as well last year. Her and Ellie, Alyssa Bannon, a full forward, and Tia Charlton, who's over in SA, were the four girls who made the under 18 All Australian squad as 17-year-olds. So Tiana, really tough defender. But also uses the ball really well. So it stands out her attack on the footy, but then her disposal sort of sets her up a bit as well. I'm not sure that she'll be number one, but she'd definitely be in the top handful of picks.
Yeah, and so you put them, whoever we draft, next to Conti, Sarah Hosking as the enforcer, talent all round, you can dream of better days.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's only up. And to be perfectly honest, I thought Richmond were in a bit of better shape than West Coast were. West Coast was sort of a bit sheltered or isolated over there in Perth and sort of flew under the radar a bit by getting that one real scrappy win over the Dogs.
Exactly. They had a worse percentage.
Yeah. And they just really... When they lost, it was really, really bad, to be perfectly honest. And I just think Richmond are in a bit of better shape with their list than the Eagles are.
Well, that's a positive take. I mean, yeah. Must admit, I was looking a bit jealously at St Kilda, but,
Yeah.
It's important. It's sort of... Okay, so we finished last, but, the great thing about, there's nothing but up here, and I know that sounds superficial, but as a fan, I mean, how good is that first win going to be?
Oh, yeah, it'll be absolutely brilliant. I doubt that, to be perfectly honest, I doubt even if the season hadn't been cut short that the win was going to come this year. I think it was at Brisbane and Adelaide to finish, and I just, watching that game against St Kilda, I covered it, and, no one's ever written a match report where the team hasn't kicked any goals. But it wasn't pretty, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, Sarah, you are, I hope we're not breaking AFL media confidentiality here by saying that you are at heart a Tiger fan.
Definitely no confidentiality. I feel like for some reason, this is a weird theory that I have, that female journos are a little bit more open with their allegiance than men. I have no idea why, but seems like the few female journos that are out there that cover AFL, you definitely know who they barrack for.
If you don't mind, like, I wasn't going to ask you this, but you're quite, is Caro a sort of, is some, because you're quite a different writer to her. You're a sort of a more, you remind me much more of a American sort of modern, very analytical writer. But do you look at it as Caro as sort of a role model?
Yeah, in a way. She's sort of, with all due respect to Caro, another generation removed from me, in a way. Like,
yeah, fair enough.
So Sam Lane was probably the one for me growing up, seeing her byline and in the paper and her on before the game was sort of, yeah, indicative that this was something that I could do possibly in the future. And for Sam, that was probably Caro, if that all makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But looking at your style, it does remind me, you know, that piece you wrote on Josh Caddy in his position change in the VFL. It sort of strikes me as the sort of it's the football and the NFL coverage I love, and NBA now. So it's sort of, you know, it's people. It's not just ex jocks talking about trading pleasantries. It's very analytical. And who else do you look at around the world and in other sports that you sort of want to emulate?
Oh, sorry, I don't really want to burst your bubble, but I don't follow American sports at all, so I've got no idea where that's come from.
Fair enough.
Cricket is probably my other sporting love. Cricket, I've always loved the getting the paper the next day and reading the story of the test of the day's play.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's not just, oh, this happened, then this happened. It's all the context around it. And I've always been quite an analytical person by nature. So I think marry the two together, the story and the analysis, and that's where I've sort of developed.
Mm. Speaking of head versus heart, Sarah.
Yes.
Were you working for the 2017 grand final?
So 2017, I was very, very junior journo. I'm still a junior journo, but I was so fresh. It was the first year. So I interned in 2016, and 2017 was really the first season for me as a casual journo. And I covered the post-match celebration. They had a crown. And I did the grand final parade, which is the highlight of my year. It doesn't matter who's playing. I love doing that.
Really?
But yeah, didn't have to worry about the game itself, thank God, because I reckon I was in a full-blown panic attack mode for the entire match.
So Nick was there for the 17 grand final parade. I was there for the 19 grand final parade. And I remember as Phil Davis went by, I was staring intently at his ankle, trying to get insight while he sat in a plastic chair.
I remember being panicked by seeing Sean Hampson in the squad.
Now, Sarah, I wanted to give you, we haven't done this before on the pod, but I wanted to give you a lightning round of hardcore Richmond supporter questions, but I want you to answer these wearing your Richmond Tragic hat, not your analytical AFLW hat. And they're going to start easy, but they are going to get a bit tougher. These are just a selection of the key issues that have been debated amongst fans. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, I'm not comfortable being on the other side of this. Usually it's me doing this. Give it your best shot and see how it goes.
Well, it's just, you know, these are just a selection of the things that that I think our fans are debating about. And, look, the first one's an easy one. Who's your current favourite Richmond men's player?
Shane Edwards, always.
Oh, good answer.
Always love Shane Edwards.
Is Bolton just starting to sneak up a little bit in your affection?
Sorry, Bolton or Bolton?
Bolton.
Both of them? They're both definitely.
Well, Bolton's the heir apparent, though, to the Shedder.
Yeah, he really is. I thought watching the other day, watching him play, I'd love to see him play netball. I know that's a really weird thing to say.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true.
Netball's my background. It's what I grew up playing. But his footwork is just sublime.
Okay, this is...
Yeah, and his change of direction skills as well.
Yeah.
Also, he can just hoof it. I don't know if that translates in netball, but anyway, getting off the point.
Long bomb into the goal circle, definitely.
Now, this is a tough one, but it's a happy one. Is what's your favourite game of this era?
Sorry, the favourite
game. So this successful Richmond era.
Yeah.
Which has been the best game?
Oh, my God.
So a few ones that people talk about is the GWS final in 17, other one of the Geelong, the first Geelong final where we beat them is my personal favourite, but lots of people like the Geelong final this year.
Second Geelong final is pretty good too.
Yeah, and obviously the 17 grand final was amazing. But, you know, what stuck with you most?
Probably this 17 game against Geelong, the 17 final. All my mum's side are Geelong supporters. We're actually, like, Reg Hickey's my cousin three times removed or something. So technically I should be a Geelong supporter. And just to finally get that win after 15 years or whatever it was, I was just a sobbing mess. My dad didn't really know what to do with me at the ground. It's quite funny.
You weren't alone. Many of us cried that day. So now things are getting real now.
Yeah.
So this is a serious question. I want you to consider your answer carefully before you answer. So we can only carry two rucks. We've got three rucks in contention. Who of Soldo, Nank and Chole do you take into a 2020 finals game?
Chole's a lock. You're not going to have Nank and Soldo together. I feel like that's too clunky. Nank. I'm sorry. I know you love Soldo, but I don't know why. I've got a few friends who are firmly in the Nank camp, and maybe they've their constant whinging has won me over. But yeah, I'll stick with Nank and Chole.
You know, if I may, like, just temporarily suspend my fanboyism and just give an honest answer, I think Soldo is actually best against the really good rucks because he's a good neutraliser. But if you're playing against a mediocre ruck, Nank, if you're winning, you'd rather have Nank because he does more skillful things. He's better around the ground. He's more likely to get a goal. He's more additive. But Soldo will take more away from the other ruck if the other ruckman's a gun.
Yeah, probably. I think also Nank just has that beast mode that Soldo probably doesn't quite have. You just when I picture Nank, it's him laying just an absolutely vicious tackle.
And he was very good earlier this year. I think he was playing angry because
he had that glint in his eye, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And he's out of contract too, so he's got a lot of reasons to play well. Now, this is one that might be close to your heart, given your past riding. Is Caddy still best 22?
Oh, wow. I was actually really, Richmond supporter hat on, I was really happy that he was dropped. Happy's probably the wrong word. But I thought that was a real statement that they made. I think
Dimmer spoke for us all when he mouthed those words.
I don't know how many times I've watched that clip. But if you wanted something to sum up the general mood of 2020, that's what it was. I think Caddy at his best, I would take him over Pickett. I just think it balances the side out a little bit better.
Okay, take him over who, sorry?
Pickett.
Okay, interesting.
It doesn't feel like there's quite enough tackle pressure sometimes when Pickett's not quite switched on.
Yep. That's fair. I can see what you're saying there. Now this is topical, and you know I'm embarrassed to ask it because it's been such a such a storm in a teacup this week. But I just for the benefit, just to put it on record, do we win the 2019 flag without Tom Lynch in the team?
Oh, definitely not.
Yep.
Definitely not.
Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah, the sides are already working out. That one tall forward was not sustainable whatsoever.
All right. Majority.
And with respect to Callum Moore, he wasn't.
Bless.
Yes. Bless. Ah, Callum. He's
on the list, so good on him.
Okay, now this one's a tricky one, and it's the last serious football question. But so if Asprey comes back, We have Asprey, Bolter, Broad, Grimes, plus Flossie, Hawley, Short, and Baker. That's eight specialist back people, but they're all best 22.
Or defenders, even.
Sorry, defenders, thank you. Me no talky good.
Unnecessarily gender neutral.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. But do you sort of shuffle? Because, like, I think those eight people, like, normally you have six defenders and one on the bench who can roll through. I think, in fairness, they're probably those eight people are best 22. Do you tweak the structure or do you bite the balls and drop one of them?
I think, it's really hard. Geelong are currently playing nine defenders. I don't know how they're doing it. So it is possible, but I think they'd be loath to change the structure. Baker could push up the ground, but I love his just kamikaze attack on the footy at the moment. So maybe Broad's the unlucky one.
Ooh. Controversial.
Out of contract, Nathan Broad. On the commentary on God knows whatever day it was, like, I'm just my day of the week functions completely dysfunctional. But in the Suns games when they mentioned Baker in midfield, I had a light bulb moment which I've not had before about Baker, but he's really come on this year. I'd always been struck, like, normally when you see AFL players up close, they look like gods. And the first time I saw Liam Baker in person, I was like, oh, he looks like a child.
I met him last year, and because he was generally with the younger players, I try and do them face-to-face interviews just because, you know, it's just a bit more easier rather than doing it over the phone. Everyone's a bit more comfortable with it all. So I went into the club and had a chat to Liam, and he is just a kid. Like it was really refreshing.
Mm. Yeah, nice. He's hard, though. He's always been one of my favourite players from the moment he got into the 22. He's a lot of fun to watch. I was going to say, I can't take credit for this analysis. It was, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this. Conrad Marshall said this to me, that the question about, you know, if you've got Asprey, Bolter, Broad and Grimes, you're quite tall, and that probably works well against the Eagles, but not well against a team like Geelong, who only have one big key forward. So, you know.
Or Collingwood.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe the cop-out answer is it depends on the matchup. Sarah, I did mention to a few people I know that were interviewing you today, and I gave them the opportunity to submit questions, and we've actually mentioned a few of their input they gave, but I'm not going to mention who gave us this question, but I'm just going to ask it, and, you know, and they just wanted to know who's your favourite Richmond fan contributor on Twitter, and why is it Simon Walsh?
Oh, I'm a huge fan of Simon. He manages to find the absurdity in footy, which is really, it is just a group of people running around chasing a ball. And why we all get so worked up about it, I don't know. But God, it's a lot of fun.
Yes, exactly. And you've got to appreciate it for what it is. Yeah. Now, Sarah, thank you so much for your time. Just before we go, do you have any thoughts about the forthcoming Dreamtime game?
Oh, well, the Richmond supporter inside of me goes into default panic mode, I think, just because I'm still not used to a successful side. So when you see a game that the team's expected to win, you panic because how could they possibly lose this one? But Essendon's forward line, it'll actually be interesting how they were talking about, you know, does the defence look too tall? It'll be interesting how they match up against a fairly second-string forward line, to be honest.
Yeah. I got to say, I think it's been, we're almost 8 years or so of dream times where we've won, so, God, we're about due for some sort of banana peel, but I'm very excited. I can only imagine how many relatives that Dan Rioli's going to have at the game.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. In a season that, you know, unless Richmond wins the premiership, I think we'd all like to forget for a lot of reasons. But you know, the Queensland Richmond supporters are living their best life, and particularly Marpio Chole's family. But I reckon there's going to be a lot of Rioli's. And
yeah, and that is one of the things we can take out of this absolute mess, hot mess of a season. There's no way Dreamtime would ever get played in Darwin. Like, it's such a lucrative game for the AFL to have it at the G. So to have it in Darwin, I'd love to see Stacky get involved in the pre-match again. That was such a special moment last year.
Mm.
So hopefully I know he said a few of the teammates were a bit shy last year, but hopefully we see a bit of involvement from them. That'd be great.
And the Essendon lads might respond, so you might get a sort of meeting halfway.
Yeah, it's something that's really, really special about our game, and it's great that there's the opportunity to celebrate it, really.
Oh, fantastic. I couldn't agree more. So I've already bought Bolton's jumper. They're always great every year, but I particularly like the one this year, and I had to admit it, but I love Geelong's Indigenous jumper this year. Like, it's just such a great celebration of the culture. So, Sarah, thank you so much. This has actually been our longest interview ever. No, it's great. You've gone longer than before mentioned Simon Wallace, so that's...
No, and out-talking Simon is no small achievement.
but it's been lovely to get to know you on a podcast, and thank you again for all your great writing.
No worries. Thanks, guys. It's been great to have a chat.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, there's time. 4, 3, 2, 1. It's a goal. One of the Tigers. Thicken. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion. Just down the bars.
Oh, she is.
Had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal.
How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is a play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. That champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
From Tigerland, we never weep until the pile of sirens gone. Like the tiger of old, the strong and ribald, for we're from Tiger, yellow and black, we're from Tigerland.
And I think they were a better team last year than they are now.